driven by Reagan-era drug laws and parallel state legislation. Prison inmates soared to 2.3 million by 2008, raising the country's incarceration rate to an extraordinary 751 prisoners per 100,000. And 51% of those in federal penitentiaries are there for drug offenses. Says McCoy, so successful were Reagan Republicans in framing this partisan drug policy as a moral imperative. The two of his liberal Democratic successors, Bill Clinton and Barack Obama, avoided any serious reform of it. Instead of systemic change, Obama offered clemency to about 1,700 convicts, an insignificant handful. But he does end on an optimistic note, referring to the end of drug prohibition, said Alfred McCoy. On the other side of history's ledger, the harm reduction movement led by medical practitioners and community activists worldwide is slowly working to unravel the global prohibition regime. By
2018, Oklahoma. Hello. Well, I had to cut that off a little bit there. Always like to hear Everett. But it's time now for the doctor's in. So I want you to know that you're listening to FM 90.1 KZFR Chico, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. And you're listening to Ken Logan, and you say, so what? Well, it just so happens that I'm the guy that does the Doctor's In the third Thursday of each month. So hang on a minute. I'm going to try to put a song on. Let me see if I can do that, and then we'll get back. I'll tell you about the show. Let's see if that works. Well, I can see that's not going to work because Radio Parallax is still playing. So I'm going to move ahead with the show. Trying to figure out these controls on the radio. I'm not a computer guy. I'm not a mechanical guy. I'm a doctor. Okay. The doctor's in is... Well, what is the Doctor's In? The Doctor's In is a show by me, Dr. Ken Logan. I'm a family practice doctor here in Chico, California. And what I do at the third Thursday of each month from 6 to 7 in the evening is to do the Doctor's In. And what I do on the Doctor's In is bring up subjects health-related and medical-related and sometimes have guests. Today I don't have a guest. I am the guest, Ken Logan. I'll tell you a little bit about the show today. I hope you stay tuned and listen, of course. Let me tell you this, though. First of all, the opinions voiced on this program do not necessarily represent the views or opinions of KZFR, its staff, board of directors, underwriters, or volunteers. Speaking of underwriters, I do want to tell you about the underwriters. First of all, the Doctor's In is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters, that's you, the listeners, and by Friends of the Arts, your state local partner to the California Arts Council since 2001. Friends of the Arts creates economic opportunity by producing and supporting events and by publishing a bi-monthly arts and culture newsletter. To stay in the know or to have your event listed, visit Friends of the Art. And I think that means on the internet, Friends of the Art. Probably friendsoftheart.net, as I recall. And by Grocery Outlet of Chico. Independent owner and operator Chris Hostetler offers local and brand names in groceries, housewares, health and beauty products, organic items, wines, and more. Grocery Outlet of Chico is opened every day from 8 a.m. to 9 p.m. Monday. Is open every day, so Monday through Monday. anyway, it is at 2157 Pillsbury Road, and on Facebook at groceryoutlet.com. Okay, today's show, I'm going to do a mix match, a mixing of things. I'm going to start out with some information about the local situation relative to COVID, the current situation, and some issues about what to do and testing area where you can get tested, and some answer some questions that are at least some common questions relative to COVID in the community. And then I want you to know that I'm going to also then move on and talk about an article, a study, an analysis of Trump lies and misinformation statements in the healthcare industry and the outcome of that. In other words, we have a president who lies, and what outcome has occurred or can occur related to healthcare with respect to that. And of course, the first obvious part of that relates to COVID, but there are other areas as well. And I'll tell you about a study done about some of the statements he's made. And then I may talk to you a bit about something that's near and dear to my heart, and that is the stranglehold that the pharmaceutical industry has on the education and of medical doctors and doctors of osteopathy, in other words, physicians in the United States, and how they indeed influence our medical education. This for-profit industry called the pharmaceutical industry. First of all, let me talk to you about COVID. So COVID-19, as everybody listening, I hope, knows, COVID, this is the, other people might call it the coronavirus, but it's the virus now that's around here. COVID-19, I like that name. It's a universal name. It's specific to this one virus. And why do we care? Why do we care about that virus in the community? Well, we care about that virus because this is a couple of reasons. It's a very infectious virus. I think you probably know that. In other words, it travels from human to human very significantly, very readily, more readily, I would say, than the influenza virus. The other problem, of as you know, with the COVID-19 virus is that it's in a sizable percentage of the population, it causes significant illness. And a significant illness, as in requiring hospitalization, and the idea of hospitalization is to help prevent death. And therefore, there's a significant percentage of the population, or significant segment of the population in the world and in the United States, that are dying from this virus currently. In the United States, we're up to about over 137,000 deaths over the last 3 months in the United States from this virus alone. 137 or more now virus deaths in the United States. I can give you a couple other figures that are interesting. We are having a rise, as you know, a rise in the numbers. We haven't flattened the curve. The curve, that is, the number of patients day to day that are getting infected, is rising, not calming down. It's rising in the United States. And this is unique in the world. The United States is unique in the world now. We get to be first in the world. Oh, boy. In the severity and the infectiousness and the rapidity of new infections in our country, there are no other countries that keep up with us on this. We're tops. We're the worst. Brazil is right behind us. So there are more than in the United States, there's more than 3 million Americans that are infected, and again, there's greater than 137,000 deaths so far. And now our new cases per day in the United States are getting close to 70,000 new cases per day in the United States. And I want to tell you what to do about that in a minute. So stay right on the edge of your chair. It's not complicated, but stay right on the edge of your chair on what to do about that. But first, I want to tell you about Butte County. Where are we in Butte County relative to COVID infections? As of yesterday, the 15th of July, there were in Low Hospital, there were 14 cases as inpatients that were in the hospital at Inlow, 14 cases. Fortunately, yesterday, only 5 of those patients were requiring intensive care unit treatment. And none of those patients were on mechanical breathing, or that is, were not on ventilators, none of them. So that's, although the 14 cases present is not a great number to me, at least only 5 of them were in intensive care and none of them needed ventilators. The day 2 days before that, on the 13th, there were 12 cases at Inlow, but in that time, there were 7 of the cases were in the ICU. So a little higher percentage were in intensive care 2 days ago. So how about the number of cases, total number of cases of infection from COVID in Butte County so far? As of, this might be 2 or 3 days old. Butte County, 416 cases in Butte County. We're up to 416 cases in Butte County. Glynn County has had 183 cases. Tehama County, 121 cases. So that, again, we are rising. Our numbers are rising, not lowering, not flattening, they're rising. So what do? Well, we do, like everybody's been saying, like Dr. Fauci from Federal National Institute of Health says, and like every other medical doctor says, we need to wear face masks. We need to prevent spread of virus by wearing face masks. All of us need to wear face masks. This is not a difficult thing. Face masks need to be worn when you're out in public. The problem with the virus is, by the way, okay, so face masks need to be worn by all of us all the time when we're out in public. Let me repeat that. Face masks need to be worn by all of us all the time when we're out in public, as well as social distancing, which means keeping 6 foot from other people as best as you can when you're out in public, and have your face mask on. And you might be annoyed by that, both of those facts. But I will tell you that the problem with this virus is, number one, it's very infectious. In other words, it goes from person to person very rapidly, or very readily, rather. And it kills people. And it maims people. It fills up our intensive care units and across the country, et cetera. Trying to keep people alive, keep them from dying. That's what the intensive care does. okay. Well, and you'd wonder why. What about the situation that makes it so infectious? Well, part of the problem is for people who carry the virus. In other words, the virus is in them and able to be spread by their breathing near somebody else. That's how it goes. If you breathe the same air near somebody else who has the virus in their little micro droplets that they're breathing, and you breathe them in, the virus will come into your body. So, and you would say, well, I'm not around people who are coughing or sneezing like they have the virus. Well, here's part of the problem. Yes, that's bad. If people are coughing and sneezing because they have symptoms of the virus, that's bad. They're really spreading the virus. They need to be isolated away from other people. I'll talk to you about isolation in a minute. But the other problem is, many of the people who carry the virus and are there and are also infectious, in other words, there are virus in their mucus droplets in every breath they take and project out into the air, around them. I think the number is in the 40% range of positive cases that are asymptomatic. That means do not have symptoms. I think we really don't know that number, but the point is there are many cases of COVID virus where the person who has the virus does not have symptoms but is likely infectious. In other words, can be spreading the virus to other people and not know it. The second fact is that early on in infection, the first 2 to 3 days especially of infection in anybody, let's say a person is going to get symptoms, either mild symptoms of cough and mild fever or worse symptoms of cough and fatigue and chills and fever. But whichever level of infection they have symptoms of, for the first 2 to 3 days after they acquire the virus or get exposed to the virus, and now the virus is setting up shop in their body, those first 2 to 3 days they have no symptoms. But what people around the world, doctors around the world are finding is that those 2 to 3 days they are infectious. In other words, they are passing the virus to other people without knowing it, and the other person doesn't know it because that person is not coughing or sneezing, isn't sick, but tomorrow they are. And so it's sneaky, this virus. It's sneaky, it's infectious, and it kills people. And in order to stop it in a community, it requires that the community as a whole do simple things, such as keep social distancing occurring. In other words, don't have group meetings of stuff. Don't group meet with people. That's the first thing. Don't do it. Meet by phone. Meet at a way distance, or certainly keep 6 foot apart or more, really, and make it outside. If you're going to meet with people, indoors really is bad because you're breathing air over and over again that's got virus in it. So outdoors, if you got to meet with somebody, meet them outside. Meet them at a distance. Wear your mask. Both of you, all of you, wear masks. And if people don't have masks, then help people get masks. And your family, your friends, help them get masks. And wear the mask correctly and persistently. And that's what we do. It's a simple thing, and we have to do it as a community. We have to do it as a community. If we don't, then the virus stays in the community, and those of us who are doing the masking and the social distancing and taking care of the COVID patients, we're beating our head against the wall if we as the public are not all joining together hand in hand. Well, not hand in hand. Don't get that close. But working together to stop this virus by wearing our masks and doing social distancing. I just so bad want to jump to the Trump thing, and everything I've just said is so downplayed and negatived and not done by people like Trump in the Trump administration, and that fuels the fire. He is responsible for deaths. Obviously, he's responsible for increased deaths due to this virus in this country. Our own president. That's disgusting. Testing. I'm going to talk more about Trump in a minute. Testing. First of all, testing availability in the United States sucks. It's not as readily available as it has been in other countries, such as South Korea and other places in the world that have done well with their social distancing and their masking and their finding cases. And when cases are found, then they do contact tracing where they follow, they find out, well, who have you been in contact with? Who have you been in contact with? Who have you been in contact with? To try to find out where the quiet cases are in the community so that they can get their hands on controlling the virus in the community. We do poorly at that in the United States, the contact tracing issue. Part of the reason is we don't have ubiquitous amounts of testing available, but it's getting better. I want you, the listeners, to know where you could get tested. First of all, before I tell you about that, I want you to know that if you have cough and fever, or if you know you've or pretty certain that you've been exposed to someone with the COVID virus, in other words, you've been around them, especially if you've been close to them without a mask on, especially, then you need to assume, I'm telling you this, listen to what I'm saying. You have to assume that you now carry the virus and have the virus without doing even a test. You need to assume that you have the virus until proven otherwise. And you have to isolate yourself. So if you have symptoms of cough and fever and illness, assume you have the virus, I'm telling you, which means isolate yourself from others. Again, I'm going to talk a little bit more about isolation in a minute, what that means. Well, let me tell you now. What does isolation mean? Well, it's simple. Isolation means don't get around other people anymore, at least for 2 weeks. You got to give it enough time to go away and for your body to fight it off. 2 weeks. That's the 14 days is the go-to number of days. And what do you mean isolate? Well, isolation, it's a no-brainer. You stay at home. You don't go out where there's other people. And that means you... somebody else has got to go to the store for you. You don't go to the store. If you feel like you have a mild or worse case of COVID, or you specifically are diagnosed with COVID, you do not go out of your house as long as you're sane and interested in not infecting the community. I hope you're not interested in infecting the community. So you stay at home. That means friends or relatives need to supply with food. If you have difficulty with friends and relatives supplying you with food, then contacting Butte County Public Health Department. They have ways of linking you with ways of getting food to you. I know that sounds silly, but I just read that today. So contacting the Butte County Public Health by phone or if you're having difficulty, if you're stuck at home from isolation and you're having trouble getting food, that's one organization you can call to help you get food. They can link you with ways of getting food. Have friends and loved ones help you with that. But the friends and loved ones need to wear masks. We all do, remember? And social distancing. They need to leave the food on the front steps and not meet you directly in order to give you the food, etc. Sheesh. So then what about testing? If you think you may have the virus, you have two options. One is to isolate yourself for 14 days, like I'm saying, and that should be enough time for that virus to be gone. 14 days. However, if you choose to be tested, first of all, you need to wear a mask. Second of all, these, without a doctor's order, the place in Chico area that you can get tested without a doctor's order is by appointment only, and that is at the fairgrounds in Chico, and that's an OptumServe. It's called OptumServe Tested. It's a company that's contracted with Butte County Public Health, with Butte County, to do the testing, COVID testing for people in Butte County. And again, you do not need a doctor's order. In order to get that test done, you need to have an appointment. And it's being held at the fairgrounds in Chico. And there's a website where you can sign up for an appointment and a phone number if you don't have a website available. I'm going to tell you what that website is, so hang on. Here he goes. So this is the website address for getting an appointment if you want a COVID test through the state of California, either via your insurance or free if you don't have insurance or you don't have insurance to pay for it. You will get a test paid for. You do not it won't cost you money if you desire a case test, and you do not need a doctor's order. And this is called OptumServe, OPTUM, and then capital SERVE. It's one word, Optum Serve, but and it's contracted through Butte County to do testing, and it's at the fairgrounds. You need an appointment. Here's the here's the website, https://// L, this is lowercase lhi.care, C-A-R-E, / COVID, that's COVID, testing, all one word. COVID, COVID-TESTING, so COVID testing. I'm going to read it again. This is the website for an appointment for COVID testing at the fairgrounds. You need an appointment. No doctor order needed. https://lhi.care. C-A-R-E, / COVID testing. I'm going to read it again. https://// lhi.care/ COVID testing to get your appointment for a COVID test at the fairgrounds. Or if you don't have access to an internet, phone number 1-888-634-1123. That's also for appointment for COVID testing at Optum Serve for free at the fairgrounds in Chico. Phone number 1-888-634-1123. I'm going to say that number again. 1-888-634-1123. Now, when you talk to somebody on the phone, I think they're going to talk to you about symptoms, if you have symptoms, etc. And I'm not exactly sure how that goes, but that's indeed the number or website you use to get an appointment for the test. You also can get tests, and I think this requires doctor order, but I'm not positive. You can get COVID testing at Ampla Health Chico and Ampla Health Orville and Ampla Health Gridley. Ampla Health is the company that does community health clinics in our north area here. The one in Chico, phone number, it's by, and by the way, these are by appointment. COVID testing by appointment only at Ampla Health Chico, Orville, and Gridley. I'm going to give you the phone numbers for Ampla Chico, Orville, and Gridley. So get ready with your pencils or pens. Chico, Ampla, phone number for COVID testing, appointment only, 342-4395. That's 342-4395. In Orville, Ampla Health Orville, by appointment COVID testing, phone number 534-7500. That's 534-7500. Then Ampla Health Gridley, appointment only for COVID testing, phone number in Gridley, all of these are area code 530. And here's the Gridley phone number for Ampla Health for COVID testing by appointment. 846-6231. 846-6231. Some questions about COVID. What should I do if I have COVID symptoms, and when should I keep seek medical care? Well, if you have a mild symptoms such as mild fever and slight cough, well, you have to isolate yourself. You have to self-isolate yourself because you probably, or you very well could have, you don't necessarily have, but you could have the virus. So you have to, first of all, you have to isolate yourself. In other words, figure you have the virus until, if you're going to get tested, maybe, you got to pretend you have the virus until you know you don't or know you do. You got to treat yourself as if you got the virus. So you got to isolate yourself, which means don't go to work, stay home. Don't go to the grocery store, stay home. The only place you're going to go is you're going to go to get a test, maybe. You could stay isolated for 14 days because if you got a mild case of COVID, the only thing you're going to do is isolate yourself for 14 days. That's the treatment. If your worsening of symptoms occur, however, then you need to call your doctor or clinic or hospital before you go there. You need to go to your doctor, a health clinic, or a hospital in your area. But you need to call them first because they're going to get ready for you. They don't want you just going there. They got to know your COVID possible before you go there. So call them first. And then here's a question, and you, everybody that's listening to this today had better get this answer correct. How can we protect ourselves and others if we don't know who is infected with COVID? And I hope everybody who's listening to this knows very well how you protect yourself and others from getting COVID, including in the cases where we don't know who in the heck's got the virus. And the two things you do are you wear a face mask all the time when you're out in public, and you do social distancing, which means 6 foot at least away from other people in public, and you have a mask on. What should I do if I come in contact with someone who has COVID? Well, if you come in contact with somebody that you know has COVID, and you know after the fact you know they had COVID, well, you have to assume that you may be infected. And so you have to isolate yourself. If you come in contact, that means you have close contact. That means you've been, you know, close to, you know, like doing things with somebody, breathing the same air with somebody who turns out to have COVID. When you were, you know, early stages of COVID, let's say when you were doing things with them, well, you have to assume, I'm telling you, you have to assume that you now have the virus and you have to isolate yourself, which means, again, stay at home. Don't go to work. Don't go store. You got to keep your virus-laden body away from other people. And that means you probably would like to try to get tested, I suspect, either at this place I was telling you about at the fairgrounds, OptumServe, or at Ampla Health, Chico, Orville, or Gridley, or I forgot to tell you, there's another place you can get it done. Chico Immediate Care. Chico Immediate Care at 376 Vallambrosia will also do, for some people, on a walk-in basis, the COVID virus testing. But it looks like it's for confirmed or suspected contacts or symptomatic people, in other words, have symptoms of COVID, or people who are healthcare facility employees somewhere. Yes, on a walk-in basis, you can get a COVID test done at Chico Immediate Care at 376 Vallambrosia. Now, that's going to cost you money, I assume, unless you have insurance, health insurance, then that will cover it. But if you don't have health insurance, that's probably not going to be a good place for you to get your COVID testing done. Plus, it looks like they don't test everybody. You got to either be suspected or have confirmed exposure, or you got symptoms of COVID, or you're a healthcare worker. But if everybody else, it doesn't sound like they necessarily do the viral testing. But I'm not positive about that. So if you got any questions for Chico Immediate Care about their COVID testing policy, their phone number is So this is Chico Immediate Care at 376 Vallambrosia. If you got questions about their COVID testing availability, their phone number is 530-891-1676. That's Chico Immediate Care at 376 Vallambrosia. If you have questions about their COVID virus testing protocol, their phone number, 530-891-1676. Another place you could get COVID testing done at is if you have an order and by appointment only, order by your doctor or your nurse practitioner or physician assistant, and by appointment only at CVS pharmacies in Chico and Orville. So CVS pharmacy in Chico and Orville, by appointment only, and I believe by a healthcare provider's order, you can get COVID testing at CVS pharmacies in Chico and Orville. I'm not going to give you their phone numbers because there's a bunch of them, or there's a few of them. But just know that's an option for you too. Again, you got to have an appointment. You got to call for an appointment, and I believe you have to have an order by your healthcare provider. But I'm not positive about that order needed. So again, I'm going to just reiterate where a human could get COVID testing in our area. Optum Serve Testing, which is at the fairgrounds in Chico. It's contracted through Butte County Public Health, so it won't cost you money. They may charge your insurance, but they won't cost you money, theoretically. And you don't need a doctor's or a healthcare provider's order. I'm going to give you website or online registration thing that's easier than that other one I gave you. So for Optum testing, if you want an appointment for testing at the fairgrounds for COVID, here it is. Here's something you can put online. It's lowercase LHI period care, CARE, / COVID testing. That's easy. So I'm going to say it again online, lhi.care/ COVID testing to get an appointment at the fairgrounds. Also, you could get a COVID test, remember, at Ampla Health, Chico, Orville, or Gridley, and or Chico Immediate Care or CVS Pharmacies in Chico and Orville. Let's see. Where else was I? How long does it take after exposure to COVID to develop symptoms? Well, there's a wide variation of how long it takes after you get exposed to get symptoms, if you're going to get symptoms. Remember, sometimes people get the virus and don't have symptoms and are still infectious, probably. But if you're going to get symptoms and you get exposed, and how long until you get symptoms after exposure? Well, 1 to 14 days is the options. In other words, woo-wee, hard to say. But usually it's within 5 to 6 days after exposure you're going to have symptoms. And remember, you can be infectious before you get symptoms. The first, say, if you don't have symptoms until 5 to 6 days after you're exposed, well, you're spreading the virus to somebody by, you know, 2, 3, 4 days, and you didn't even know it. And how do you help prevent that? Well, we all wear masks. Have I said that already on the air? Wear masks, all of us, when we're out in public, and do social distancing. Okay, how about going to the grocery store? If you're not isolating yourself, in other words, you don't think you have the virus currently, because you haven't been known to be exposed, or you don't have any symptoms, and so you don't feel you have the virus. Well, what about going to the grocery store to limit your likelihood for getting, picking up the COVID virus at the grocery store? Well, I bet you can think of one thing. Wear a mask. Always wear a mask. Number one. Number two, still stay 6 feet from everybody. in the store as best you can. And avoid touching your eyes, mouth, and nose. And wash your hands when you get home. So when you go to the grocery store, wear a mask. Try to still do your social distancing of 6 foot or more. Avoid touching your eyes, nose, mouth. And wash your hands well when you get back home. Personally, I wear disposable gloves and a mask when I go, but I have access to disposable gloves. You might not have access to that. Well, I've kind of run that COVID thing into the ground. If anybody has questions about COVID, the World Health Organization, WHO, has some great information online. World Health Organization, just look it up. And you could say COVID update. If you Google COVID, COVID update on the internet, you're going to get a lot of options on information for yourself. Second thing is, if you needed to call Butte County Public Health, and I'm sorry, I don't have their phone number on me, that's another option. Or you could get on their website, Butte County Public Health. I want to talk about Trump. So I was sitting at home thinking, you know, Trump tells lies and misinformation, or whatever you want to call it. They're lies, and to the public about public issues, public policy. And I thought, well, you know, how's that affecting health stuff? So it turns out that a guy named William Hatcher published he did an analysis and study and published it on that very subject, Trump's health misinformation and lies and how that can affect the public. He published this in the Journal of Public Health for Oxford Academic, which happens to be a British, an arm of the British, the old British university, Oxford. But it came out in December 31st, 2019 in the Journal of Public Health, Oxford Academic, this past December 31st. And what he did was he did an examination of healthcare-related lies from Trump from the minute he was when he was inaugurated, January 2017, through April 27th of 2019. So approximately the first 2 years, a little over first 2 years of Trump's presidency, using data from research that was done by the Washington Post to people from the Washington Post put together misinformation or lies, false misleading statements that Trump had done over those first 2 years, found 10,000 more than 10,000 false or misleading statements public about public policy by Trump. Well, how many of those were having to do with health? Were 662. So the first two, and this is just a overview, but for the first 2 years, a little more than first 2 years of Trump's presidency, he made in public 662 false or misleading statements related to healthcare. I call them lies. So 662 lies made by Trump relative to healthcare in the first little over 2 years of his presidency. This degree or level of false or misleading statements by any person in a political elite position like president of the United States was of course is unprecedented. I haven't seen this before, in at least in the United States. So this William Hatcher, looking at this data that Washington Post put together, and he wanted to do this study to put thought and a voice to the potential outcomes from these healthcare-related lies that come from the mouth or the Twitter typing of Donald Trump. So first of all, the study established some common sense-related facts relative to what can potentially happen when political elites communicate to the public about health and healthcare-related subjects. The communication from the political elites can influence the public's behavior in a good way or a bad way, depending on what the political elite, like the president, is saying. So that communication is a big deal that comes from the president relative to fashioning or affecting what happens in the public health realm. So it's important responsibility of the president. And the communication to the public from somebody like Trump can be of two kinds. It can either be true or not true. In other words, it can be just his opinion and just bull and something he may believe. Or it could be something that's based in solid fact and evidence-oriented fact. And we already know, you know, I know, Trump doesn't do that. He doesn't live in, his brain doesn't do knowledge and fact-oriented thought. He does hocus-pocus thoughts, stuff that has only to do with the good of Trump, not the good of others. I listened to, on National Public Radio, it was either yesterday or today, an interview with somebody named Mary Trump, who is Donald Trump's niece, the son of Donald Trump's brother. That brother happens to be dead, but nonetheless, Mary, the niece, the niece of Donald Trump, has written a book about Donald Trump. And what she talked about was Trump's dad being very aloof and not nice and not caring of others, but really a self-oriented, money-mongering bad guy, and bad guy to Donald. And wouldn't you know it, that's who Donald grows up to be like, she says. Dad. I think his name is Fred. I can't remember exactly. So not able to care for others. His brain doesn't care for, he doesn't care for others. He only cares for himself. He doesn't, truths are not part of what he does. He just does, out of his mouth comes things that only are for his good. That's the kind of guy you don't want for president, you don't want as president. And one of the things that this manipulation of information that comes out of his mouth relative to healthcare issues, that manipulation of the data to or of the information to for his good only and not for the public good, the outcome of that, of course, is negative health-wise. And let me tell you what this study that was, again, in the journal Public Health and Oxford Academic that I was reading about this lies that Trump did and the how that affects health. There were glaring examples of public health manipulation via false statements or lies that Trump had undertaken. And in the study, they looked at things, the stability and cost of Affordable Care Act was some of the lies. He called it Obamacare. Trump called it Obamacare. When he's doing false statements about the Affordable Care Act, he calls it Obamacare. The other false statements that this article looked at was veterans' health care via the VA and health care coverage relating to pre-existing conditions and Medicare for All proposals and cost of prescription medications and then the subject of abortions. These were the six or seven areas of healthcare topics that they looked at relative to false statements and some of the consequences of those false statements relative to behavior of the public and, in actuality, the health of the public, all because of these lies that come out of the mouth of this guy named Donald Trump. So the outcome or the fallout from Mr. Trump's manipulation of public opinion by these lies and misinformation he spews includes, inappropriately so, some people not obtaining health insurance because of some of his lies about healthcare insurance. And some people, inappropriately so, ending up being opposed to Medicare and therefore Medicare for All. And some people, inappropriately so, feeling that our federal government is doing a good job at helping the cost of prescription medications come down significantly. That was a good one. his lies. Some people think the government's that he is doing a good job at helping the cost of pharmaceutical by prescription medications coming down. Whew, there's a lie. Some people, inappropriately so, also ending up with false information and relative to the and poor understanding of what issues related to abortion, such as the partial birth abortion. You wouldn't believe some of the statements quoted on Trump relative to that. It's disgusting and embarrassing. And, of course, extremely inappropriately so, relative to lies on the COVID thing, significantly increased level of harm and prevalence of death from COVID-19 virus throughout the country because of Trump's lies and misleading words to the public. Directly, a direct consequence of that is an increased prevalence of death from COVID virus in the United States and harm. You know, there's plenty of harm that COVID does, you know, maiming people and time off work and hospital ICU care and all that stuff, besides the death. And then there's the deaths. All that significantly increased in our country because of public statements by Donald Trump. Wow. How about having that on your shoulders? Wow. And that's our president, who I hope isn't president soon, like as of what happens in November election. Well, I wanted to give you a little bit, at least tell you about an article about the pharmaceutical industry. And let me say one thing about the issues that I just got done saying about President Trump and Trump's dad, who was a you know, a hard guy, to hard on his kids and very self-oriented and not loving, and there Trump's the same thing. I mean, Donald Trump's the same thing. You know, well, what's the underlying evil thing in the Trumps? It's the same thing that's the underlying evil thing in the pharmaceutical company, pharmaceutical industry subject that I'm going to briefly mention. And that is greed. And that is money. And that is our capitalistic society. We live in a society where capitalism is a given. I mean, it's just the way. It's the thing. And it's been pounded into us as the way and the thing in this country forever, for at least the last 100 years. And what comes from that is greed. And specifically related to the pharmaceutical industry, it's so greed-laden, and it's allowed. The greed and the fallout from the greed of the pharmaceutical industry in the United States is allowed to occur. And why is it allowed to occur? You know, we physicians, even the organizations such as the American Medical Association, California Medical Association, American Academy of Family Physicians, any organizations of physicians in this country, and we sit back and watch the pharmaceutical industry do what it does to this public and to doctors' education, which is the thing I want to talk a little bit more about here. It's disgusting. And why is it in our brains that it's okay? Why aren't we up in arms about it like big time? Because I swear we're in a capitalistic society where greed is okay. Doing everything you can for the dollar is just part of our life. It's part of how we're raised. It's just in our brains. And so that's why we're allowing, in blatant ways, the pharmaceutical industry to get away with what it does. And the pharmaceutical industry, there's an article, an NBC article that I saw on Yahoo from 7/7/2020. So on 7th of July, you could find it in Yahoo NBC article titled, "It's a Dream Job." And it's about a sales representative from a pharmaceutical company, Novartis, N-O-V-A-R-T-I-S, Pharmaceuticals, one of the many for-profit pharmaceutical companies or drug companies in the United States. And he was a sales rep or a sales representative, a salesman to doctors in his area, I think in New York State. I can't remember where. Maybe it was New York City. From 1999 to 2013 is when he worked for them. And he ended up being a whistleblower, filing suit in federal court under the False Claims Act against Novartis Pharmaceutical Company relative to their ongoing activities. Relative to their activities in influencing doctors, influencing practicing physicians to influence them to prescribe Novartis medications. And so he was a sales rep, and it started to bother him how the company was spending money on dinners, luxurious dinners and alcohol and sporting events tickets and other luxury events and other things for practicing physicians to try to influence and encourage the physicians to write the prescriptions for these Novartis medications, which there's a bunch of. And I'm getting down to the last few minutes of this, so I'm going to try to summarize this. But the bottom line is Novartis is no different than any other pharmaceutical country relative to their standard approach of for-profit. They're a for-profit entity, and they do their best to influence physicians in our country to prescribe the greatest number of prescriptions for their products as possible. And the pharmaceutical industry's influence over physicians in this country is not simply these salespeople meeting with physicians and trying to get them to do that. There's plenty of other things they do. And I want to give you a hint of some of those other things they do. I'm only going to be able to tell you a little bit of what I want to tell you. Maybe I'll do a little more on another show. But here's an important thing about pharmaceutical industry and physicians in the United States. We practicing physicians, in order to keep our licenses current, need to have what we call medical education hours annually. Just for my license as a doctor, I have to have 25 hours of certified medical education hours every year. 25, and it has to be certified. And it's a little bit of a story how it gets certified and what organizations certify it. But if I was going to keep my family practice board certification, it would be 50 hours per year. So where does that medical education certification hours come from? I'm going to summarize by saying greatly, I would say the vast majority, the bulk of medical education hours and things that we physicians do to obtain our medical required medical education hours are pharmaceutical industry propagated or paid for or come from them. For instance, conferences that we go to for medical education to get continuing medical education hours from. I don't know the figures in the United States relative to percentage of the cost or coming from or being paid for by them, but the issue is that it's the bulk, and the bulk of the cost of the conferences and the advertising that's done in the journals and the even influencing the medical education and medical schools, a lot of the professors and people who teach in medical schools, well, a lot of their payment or their money they get to live off of comes from pharmaceutical industries paying for research they're doing. I'm having trouble getting the music to come up, so I'm just going to hand this over to you in a sec, okay? So the...